Hello everyone, welcome back to Help Me Think. Today is one of those days where I just don't know what to talk about, and usually on those days I just decide not to record anything and record something later, and usually I just have a day when I have time to record something before like Saturday so that I can edit the episode and post it. But today I don't have time because I'm leaving tomorrow evening and I won't be here until Sunday, and because I said that there's going to be an episode every week, I do really want to make an episode every week even if I don't have anything to talk about. That's also actually an interesting topic, I guess. Something about discipline and just, you know, sticking to what you said you would do even when it doesn't, like, when you don't feel like doing it, or where it feels maybe even forced sometimes. Because sometimes I really do ask myself, like, why am I doing this? Why am I recording something if I don't feel like it? Why do I, like, this podcast is for me, you know? Like, it's not really my job. I don't owe anyone anything. But I guess I remember people telling me that they enjoy listening to the podcast and that they do listen to it, and like there is not zero people who listen to it, even if it's just two, you know, it's still someone who maybe is waiting for it every week, who knows. But at the same time, I do also know that I do like doing it. I enjoy recording, I enjoy talking, I enjoy editing the episodes, I enjoy talking to people in the episodes when I do have people here. And that's just something, I think, like a characteristic, how you can realize that there is going to be some days where you're not going to feel like doing something. I think most commonly we hear it about maybe exercising, or, you know, doing some like health related stuff to just be disciplined or something, or studying, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But I think also things that you just want to do for yourself, some creative stuff as well, you do have to sometimes just stick to it, even if you don't feel like it. But it's really hard to recognize when you just don't really enjoy doing it anymore, and when it is like you just being lazy on that particular day. I also heard it being said by some writers, or I read it somewhere, that writing, that seems like a creative thing, you know, creative job, that you just write whenever you feel the muse. But actually a lot of writers, like on some days you just have to sit down and force yourself to write something. Even if you're gonna end up just deleting all of it, you still have to try and do some work, because it can turn into something actually very good, you know. And that's how I feel about episodes, I think, sometimes. And sometimes I just do it because I know for myself that if I stop, if I allow myself, if I say like, yeah, okay, I don't feel like talking today, and like this week I can't be bothered, I can't be bothered to edit it, I don't have time, I'm just gonna do it later or next week, because like no one's listening to it anyways, I'm just gonna let myself just slide off it completely, and then very likely I won't ever come back to it, or I'll come back to it in a, such a long time, and it's just gonna feel like a chore. But now it's much easier to get through a couple of weeks where you don't really enjoy doing it, but to just keep up with, I don't know, just this habit of like editing even, and not forget how to do it. So it's just easier to then, when you have this creativity again and ideas, or maybe people who you can talk to on the podcast, it is much easier to just keep it going than to restart it. So that's just a thought of today. This podcast is going to be out, keeping my word, but I don't want it to sound like, yeah, I'm doing it for you guys, because I'm actually doing it for myself, really, because I do want to keep it up and I do want to have the podcast still. But sometimes there is just those days that I don't have any smart ideas, or any like questions that bother me other than my exam tomorrow, you know, like it's just something is happening but there is no like a question that I'm like, or maybe I do have questions but I don't really feel like talking about them at all or on a podcast. But today I thought we're going to start this new series. I mentioned this book in one of the episodes. It's called The Book of Human Emotions by Tiffany Watt Smith. And this is basically, I don't know how many, oh, here we go, 154 rare and familiar feelings. So there's like some feelings like excitement and hopefulness that we all know. But then there is also, let me just open a random page, vengefulness. So it's V-E-N-G-E-F-U-L-N-E-S-S. And I'm just going to read it because I have no idea what that means. It's just about a page, 2 pages long, so that we all learn something today. And maybe I can share my thoughts about that wonderful feeling. Or maybe not that wonderful, we're going to find out in a second. So, vengefulness. The brilliant retort that slices the smug back down to size. The shiver of nasty pleasure which comes from seeing someone floundering and speechless who only moments before was bulging with reproachfulness. Yes, there is glorious satisfaction in tit for tat. Oh, it's like, yeah, tit for tat. Because I don't know what retort means. And floundering and bulging and reproachfulness. So I guess it's when someone who deserves something bad gets something bad. It's when our pride is wounded by an insult or some oversight has left us baffled or stunned that vengefulness gives us a chance to restore lost dignity. Even if the revenge only happens in the mind's eye, the more baroque and excessive the better, it can still achieve the restoration. Dishonor, wrote the philosopher Jeremy Bentham, consists not in receiving an insult, but in submitting to it. An idea once popular among historians is that vengeful feelings used to be much more acceptable in the past than they are today. That's actually, I think, true. When people were hurt by like an insult and they would just have a duel. And now it's, what is it like? It's like about self-love, and if you know your self-worth, then you're not going to be offended by whatever people say about you. And if you react, like, you know how people say, like, it's something else, but when people say, what people say about others says more about them. I really like this one. But this also doesn't, like, contradict the fact that if someone, like, hurts you, or if someone offends you or says something mean to you, like, it doesn't mean that you can't be hurt and you can't be angry with them. Like, you can't be really, like, mad at the person and upset, and you want to get a revenge. Or I think maybe it's not even only about someone saying something rude or mean to you. It's about something, someone doing something like bad that you don't like, or dishonoring you, or like your lost dignity basically makes you want to get a revenge. And this is vengefulness. Oh wow, that makes sense. It's like venge and venge. I like that. So in the past, it says it was more acceptable. According to the influential historian and sociologist Norbert Elias, who wrote in the 1930s about the civilizing process of medieval Europe, people of the Middle Ages were wild, cruel, prone to violent outbursts. Private feuds and vendettas simmered up among the nobility, while the little people too, the hatters, the tailors, the shepherds, were all quick to draw their knives. I guess it is good maybe that we are not as vengeful now, but I guess people could just, you know, like, talk back. But that's like, I don't know, because it is like more peaceful if people just love themselves enough to not have the urge and not have the need to reply to an insult. The thing is, the trick is not to like take it in and to just suppress it inside of you, but to actually like let it go. You know, you hear it and you let it bounce off you and it just goes into the space, you know, and then it's better, I think, than just draw their knives and kill each other. But I guess there is also, if you do know like your worth, right, and you do let it bounce off you, it like kind of, it scrapes you, you do notice it, you do want to put a person in place, and then you just say something back to them, because to kind of like, I don't know, teach them a lesson, I guess. so that they don't maybe spread this negativity and don't say mean things to other people. I don't know, I think even for me it's controversial because I don't like, I'm not going to say I don't like fights and I don't like drama because it is fun, but I don't want to like promote it and I don't want to say like, yeah, you know, like you should talk back and you should insult people back. But like in movies, let's say, there is always this character, at least I love when there is this character, who always know what to say. They do talk back. They respond to like insults and to mean things that are being said to them or their friends, but they do it in exactly the right way. And that's always people who are so confident. It's always people who know their worth and who say something mean back to the person who said something mean to them, not because they need a validation or a confirmation from them of their worth. It's because, well, like how I see it, let's say they went through something really shitty and they do know they deserve the world, and they're always so like experienced and they really see through people, I think. And I think that's really powerful because you can, without starting a big drama, without starting a big fight and like a messy, dirty, just like talking mean things at each other, but they just cut it off, you know? Something mean is being said or like done to them and they just cut it off with a phrase or one action, you know? And for me, that's what it sounds like. But I guess vengeful is not really about that. I think that's about getting revenge. That's about really feeling this hatred inside and this hurt, feeling it inside and wanting to get back at the person that hurt you. So I think that's a bit of a different one. But yeah, let's keep reading. Today's historians paint a different picture. They argue that even though inflicting punishments was often a matter of individual honour in 12th and 13th century England, it was still a tightly regulated process. The rules around private vengeance required that the punishment be carefully matched with the crime, a version of the much older lex talionis, an eye for an eye, so that victims could achieve satisfaction without setting off a cascade of further retaliation. Against this backdrop, the passion of vengefulness was a two-part process. It involved both an urgent desire to right a wrong and also the rational task of weighing an appropriate punishment. There is also a link, see also remorse. I don't see how it is linked to remorse. But yeah, so it's a two-part process involving urgent desire to right a wrong and also the rational task of weighing up appropriate punishment. So it can't be just like going back at the person and like, if they said something rude to you, you just kill them. So there has to be like a correct response. And it used to even be regulated on, I don't know, probably not a country level. Well, I guess it depends on a crime, maybe. But it was, you know, there was like a law for it. So that was in 12th and 13th century. However, by the 16th century, judges and courtiers were quick to portray vengefulness as unruly and dangerous. With the expansions of the legal system across England, it was no wonder that the official methods of state punishment were being held up as morally superior and private vendettas frowned upon. Philosophers followed suit. Revenge is a kind of wild justice, wrote Francis Bacon, which the more man's nature runs to, the more outlaw to weed it out. So, revenge is a kind of wild justice, which the more man's nature runs to, the more outlaw to weed it out. So, the more people want to get a revenge, the more the law tries to like make it not happen, basically. Interesting. Not following. Did these efforts to discredit vengefulness work? The revenge strategies, oh, it's like a type of, I guess, like theatre pieces, so popular in the late Elizabethan and early Jacobean theatre, cast doubt in the law's capacity to provide a reasonable alternative to private vengeance. In Kyd's The Spanish Tragedy, first performed in 1592 and one of the earliest of this form, the law is impotent and untrustworthy. The Knight Marshal, Hieronymo, tears the papers when he meets petitioners who want help with their cases, literally ripping up the letter of the law. So when Hieronymo's own son is murdered, it's no surprise that he takes matters into his own hands, plotting a complicated vengeance. Like so many of the plans concocted by wronged characters in revenge tragedies, his is long-winded and complex. The thinking, and often procrastination, which went into these revenge plots is the opposite of an angry outburst. Oh, so it is not an angry outburst. The revenge ultimately might be bloody and messy, but the vengefulness is not. It is much more deliberate, and its end result is served cold. So it is kind of in the middle of what I said in the beginning. So it is like served cold. So it's just like cutting, like a straight cut, like a razor blade. You know, that's just sharp and it's done. But it involves anger, I think, in the beginning. But people, like, it's the ability to make use, if you can say that, of their anger and not be carried away by the anger and just go and kill their whole family if they said a mean word to you. That's a cool feel. I like this emotion. That's just so, like, it's just so fair and it's like so valid, like, because people do get angry and people do get offended and people are mean to each other. I mean, I don't like that people do still go and like really hurt others, you know, like, I guess it depends on times, but if we're talking about past, then they would just kill each other, or, you know, really, like, especially like physically hurt each other. I don't like that. But I like that it's not fully emotional, that it's not out of the, like, out of hand, just fully like an outburst, because when it's not controlled, it's fine that emotions, like, you can't really control emotions, but you can control your actions. And I think this is like emotion that is tied to actions. So vengefulness is wanting to carry out this planned and the one that is served cold, this whole action. And this sounds very smart and something that needs a lot of mental ability, and that's not something that just a person could just go and do, you know, without a complete like plan. Right, back to the book. Conflicted attitudes towards vengefulness still linger. Of course, we ought to rise above our desire to get even. Of course. it says of course, and then in parentheses, it says of course again with a exclamation mark. So, of course, we ought to rise above our desire to get even. We all know the conventional wisdom is that we're the ones who suffer most from our own vengeful feelings, or, as Bacon puts it, a man that studieth revenge keeps his own wounds green, which otherwise would heal. We are suspicious of retaliatory urges, but sometimes quietly impressed by them too. Why else do we so gleefully recount those urban legends, the prawns soon into the curtain's hem, the immaculate collection of Savile Row suits with the arms scissored off? Perhaps there is a strange admiration for those who daringly act on their vengeful impulses, while the rest of us dutifully submit, if not to the insult, then to the due process, and perhaps feel a little paler as a result. For another outlawed emotion, see hatred. See also resentment, insulted, feeling, satisfaction. That is so interesting. Because they do talk about, like, this emotion being outlawed and people kind of admiring others, the ones who, like, follow their vengefulness and they do carry out the thoughts and, like, the plans and the emotions, who kind of, like, yeah, who do not submit to either the law or to like the social norms of suppressing your hatred and anger and vengefulness and wanting to get revenge, basically. I think it's just such an interesting concept as well of some emotions being outlawed. And it's like, first step is, I think, some emotions being socially not accepted. And there is so many. I think it depends also on cultures, because some emotions, like, even just like crying, it's not even emotion, but like sadness is, well, actually sadness is accepted, I think very accepted in like European and I think USA as well cultures, but crying isn't really. And I think in most cultures crying isn't really accepted socially, and it is becoming more acceptable through like social media as well. It's like emotions, I think, in general are becoming more of a norm, but still, obviously, there is still like some standards. I sometimes feel like so many, like every single emotion is actually not outlawed, but socially outlawed. Like, if you just walk around like smiling or laughing or just like looking really happy, it's not a norm. But also, if you cry, if you like look really sad, then people are probably also gonna look weird at you. But I feel like if you sit down like on a bench in a park, right, and you look really sad or you're like almost crying, it is more normal and like, well, yeah, they had a bad day. Then if you sit down on a bench and you just like laughing, or you just sit down and you look at people and you smile, when I walk around, I just go through a city and I just feel really happy and I feel so uplifted, you know, and I start smiling, I feel so weird and I start acting like I'm watching something on my phone or I'm talking to someone and someone said something funny, or maybe like I'm listening to something funny, but I can't just go and smile because it just feels weird. It feels like either I'm looking at someone and laughing at them, or I'm on something, I don't know, alcohol, drugs, whatever. The thing is, I think that too. Sometimes I think that about people. And well, that's just about stereotypes and like judgments from appearance. But isn't it weird? If you see like a very sad person, then you just think, yeah, they had a bad day, and that's more normal than being happy. There was a study, I don't remember where, I think they did it in different cities. Let me actually find it, 1 second. Right, okay, I got it. So Happiness Research Institute in Copenhagen. This is really an interesting institution. They do actually research happiness and why people in different countries are more or less happy. So yeah, very recommended to look into that. And Mike Viking, I'm not completely sure how you pronounce his name, who founded this institute, is author of several books, and this information that I'm gonna just share with you in a second is from a little book of Lykke. This is, I think, Happiness in Danish. Yeah, The Little Book of Lykke. Yeah, and he basically, in this book, he wrote about different factors that he researched of how people in different parts of the world, so this is not about Danish people, why people are more or less happy. And he basically researched where people smiled more, just on the streets. And this is so sad, actually, because how often do people smile on the streets? First place is Malaga. It is a city in Spain. And percentage is 13.9. So 13.9 people, so let's say 14%. So this book came out in, I think, 2017, sorry. So it is kind of dated, but I highly doubt that people smile more now for some reason. This is actually 8 years ago. This is insane. I would hope that people smile more, but like 14% is really not a lot. It's 1 out of 10 people smiles walking down the street. Second place is Milan, 12.7%. It's going down quite quickly. And third place is Kuala Lumpur, and it's 12.5%. New York is 1.4%. Is 1 out of 100 people. 1.5 out of 100 people smiles when walking down the street. London, 4%. Lisbon, 7.7. Copenhagen is actually 12.7 as well. Second place. But this is so little. This is so few people smiling, actually. And there was also another statistic. So basically they asked, I don't know the expression in English, if people actually say that, but basically they ask people in different countries if they thought that like laughter without reason is a sign of foolishness. And in Germany and Switzerland, Malaysia, China and Austria, Egypt, Philippines, which makes sense to me, and the UK and so on, but Germany and Switzerland are the first ones to say that no, they actually see smiling people as more intelligent. And Japan, India, Iran, South Korea, Russia, Israel said that they perceived smiling people as less intelligent. And there is countries like in the middle as well. And also like in Russian, there is the saying, laughter without reason is a sign of foolishness. And that's just so crazy to me. Because basically whatever you do in society, like it is really about everything, but even about emotions. And that's just something that's like, that just makes me think like it is obvious, you know, some violent. It's just so hard because, you know, you can outlaw some actions. You know, you can say you cannot go and kill people or you cannot hurt people. But there is outlawed emotions. And that is insane because emotions, I mean, I guess some of them, the emotions do make us to humans because I guess some emotions maybe cannot be experienced by animals. But that was actually not the point. I wanted to say like emotions is what makes us human, but I don't actually think so. Because I think animals do also experience a lot of emotions out of even these in this book. But how can you just say, like, no, you can't feel that. You can't think that way. Because, right, no one can know what you feel. But if you go to someone and say, like, you know, I really want to hurt them back. I'm so upset. I'm so angry at what this person did to me or said to me. And I really want to go and poke them in the eye. Because they poked me in the eye, or they poked my brother in the eye. You're gonna sound crazy. No, you're actually not. Actually, you're not. Because if someone actually has poked your brother in the eye with something sharp, then it does make sense that you want revenge. And I guess people, you know, all those true crime stories, like Gabby Petito. I don't really know many, but that's just something I watched on Netflix. When she disappeared, basically, she went with her boyfriend, where she went traveling in, like, a camping van, and then she didn't come back, and she, like, they lost all contact with her, and her boyfriend came back home, and people were, like, in front of their house and, like, wanting to know something about her, so that it is kind of, it is vengefulness, isn't it? Because it is, like, I mean, their feelings weren't hurt, really. I guess that's some different feeling. Like, it is wanting a revenge, but for someone else. But it's wanting, like, justice. It's not like you are hurt and you have this anger inside of you. And then you make a plan how to hurt the person who hurt you. So, yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I guess if someone really hurt some of, like, you know, my friend or my family member. And I did say, like, yeah, I want to do it. But you can say it to your friend, but you can't. I don't know, I think if you went to a therapist, they would recommend you to go to, you know, they would try to, like, heal you from that. I don't know if it's good or bad. I get it is good. I guess that they want to help you, like, feel better, because that's how the situation is. Like, your brother has been poked in the eye, so what can you do now, you know? And you shouldn't, I guess, hurt someone else. But the feeling is that, like, the wanting to do it is there, and I think it is very justified. So I like this feeling. I like this vengefulness. That feels so good to, like, you know, have learned a new word that I can use now. So if I'm, like, upset, if I'm insulted by someone, I can know what I feel like. I feel vengeful. Like, I feel like I want to hurt them back. It doesn't mean I will do it, but it means that I have this urge to do it, which I can either follow or I can suppress it and, you know, deal with it somehow else and not ever hurt anyone. So let me know if you enjoyed this format. I definitely did, and I definitely will do that again. I hope I will also have my own questions that I can entertain you with. But for now, I thank you for listening, and I hope you come back for the next episode next week. And good luck to me tomorrow for my psychology exam. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.